WMFO Medford. Of February 2024. My name is Arthur. A little technical difficulties here already, right off the bat. Happy Valentine's Day. For the first 40 minutes of the program, we're going to hear a continuation of what I played last week, the Valentine Matter. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. That's a medley. I spliced them all together, so you don't have to hear the redundancy of all the intros and so forth. These aired on the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th of November, 1955. Thanks for listening.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
This is Ann Ward. Mrs. Valentine. Have you heard anything about Dan?
Nothing, Mrs. Valentine. The police are looking everywhere for him.
I went to the hospital tonight and they told me he walked out. He might die, Mr. Dollar.
I know, Mrs. Valentine.
Did you tell anyone I was here in New Orleans?
If you mean did I mention it to the police, no.
Thank you, Mr. Dollar. That was very kind of you.
But it makes me mad that I didn't, Mrs. Valentine. I know you don't want anybody to find you're related to him because of your daughter. But I also think you could help the police in this situation. You could help them find Dan and put him back in a hospital.
Mr. Dollar, would you come over and talk to me, please? Please.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the New Britain Mutual Insurance Company, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Valentine matter. Some more expense. I believe this is item 5. Yeah, $4. 4 drinks for myself. When a next big shot of the Roaring Twenties like Dan Valentine carries a $50,000 life insurance policy and walks down the street one day and gets himself shot and refuses to disclose who fired the bullets, I have to do the worrying for the insurance company. When he decides to leave a hospital bed minus a pint or two of blood, I have to worry some more. I needed those drinks. You can just say I liked what I'd seen of the guy, and I didn't want him to walk around New Orleans bleeding to death.
In here, please, Mr. Dollar.
The wife, who hadn't seen or heard from him for 13 years, looked pale and wan. It was obvious that the strain was beginning to tell on her, although she tried hard not to show it.
Doesn't it ever cool off in New Orleans?
Sometimes. But I'm not here to talk about the weather, Mrs. Valentine. You know that.
Yes, I know.
Well, don't just stand there and give me the tears, then. If you've got anything to say, say it. If you know anything that'll help, let me know about it.
You're perfectly right in being angry with me. Mr. Dollar, I honestly don't know where Dan is.
Well, do you know why he'd get up out of a hospital bed and endanger his life?
I have an idea he might have wanted to see somebody.
Who?
I don't know.
The two men who shot at him?
Perhaps. I just don't know.
We aren't getting anywhere, Mrs. Valentine. Look, I'm going to talk to you frankly. Why did he come here to live in New Orleans?
Well,
You live in New England with your daughter, Teresa. Obviously, Dan thinks a great deal of you and her. He's given you everything, provided for you, with all of his troubles. Spent 13 years in prison. I can imagine his thoughts about you and her while he was in there. And yet he comes out and lives 2,000 miles away from you.
He didn't want to interfere with Teresa in any way.
Sure. But it seems to me he'd want to look at you, at her, certainly. Even if it was a matter of living in Boston and taking a bus to New Salem and standing on a street corner one day to watch the two of you cross the street. That sound reasonable to you?
If you put it that way.
Well, look, there's some reason he picked New Orleans. Some reason he didn't give himself the little gratification of just looking at you and Teresa. Why? Why here?
I'm sure I don't know.
And why is he running around now?
I can't answer that either.
But it must have something to do with you and your daughter. Obviously, you're the only ones he ever cared about. Well?
I honestly don't know.
Well, and I can't help you, and I can't help myself or him.
You mentioned his having a reason to be in New Orleans. Maybe...
What?
There was a man named Webster, Conrad Webster. He was a member of the Illinois Bar once in those days. Did a great deal of work for Dan and friends of Dan. I think he lived here.
Wait a minute, I've seen that name... Yeah, on copies of the insurance policy. A man named Webster had the power of attorney. He bought the insurance. There's a trust in there for your daughter.
Yes, Conrad Webster was an old friend of Dan's. I don't even know whether he's alive now or not. He drank a great deal later on. I think he lived here.
Was he the kind of friend Dan would go to if he needed help?
Yes, I think so.
All right.
What are you going to do?
It's just something to look into. I'll try and find Webster, and maybe I can find your husband.
Thank you for coming by. I needed somebody to talk to. What?
I hope he stays alive, Mrs. Valentine. Item 7, $16. The money it cost me to find out the location of Conrad Webster. I started at his last known address, followed a series of bars, and finally got information from a bartender that led me to the crummier half of a decaying duplex on Gentilly Street. Everything was quiet for Gentilly Street.
Young man, the drugstore delivers what I need most. The telegraph office, what I dread most. Obviously, you represent neither, and therefore you are no concern of mine.
Wait a minute. Are you Mr. Webster? Conrad Webster?
I am he, and I am drunk and disheveled, and it is 3 o'clock in the morning.
I'd like to talk with you. May I come in?
You may not.
This isn't exactly the hour for making calls, but I did stop by and pick up something to take the edge off.
Did?
It's bonded.
Oh, inside. Now then, you were going to apologize.
Here you are, Mr. Webster.
Oh, well. Now then, as long as this lasts, you will last.
All right. I'm looking for a man.
The entire world is looking for a man. Just one man. A man they blindly presume will break off these shackles that bind us and lead us forth into eternal justice.
Yeah, sure, but that's not
what... An ironic anticipation.
I'm talking about Dan Valentine.
You are?
Yes, I'm a friend of his.
No. No, you don't come from that place. The pallet is not with you. You lie.
I didn't say I was in jail with him.
And where else would he have made friends these long years?
He's out of prison now. He's been out for 3 months.
And I'm aware of that.
Did you know he was shot at yesterday? 3 hours ago, he left his hospital bed. I thought he might have come to you. Is he here?
He is not.
Do you know where he is?
I do not.
Mr. Webster, if Valentine isn't back in the hospital pretty soon, he'll die.
Why is the phenomenon of death so persistently alarming? So he will die. They all die. Usually from a bullet.
And that's what's going to happen to him. 2 bullets he stopped yesterday. Do you understand me?
Acutely. You've impressed me with the urgency of his situation. But Dan Valentine is not here, nor has he been here, nor has he contacted me, nor do I know where to contact him.
All right, Mr. Webster, all right. I guess I believe you.
Your concern for him is a distressing irritation. What is the reason for it?
I'm an insurance investigator, and it's my job to keep him alive. More than that, I like him. I told you I was his friend. I think he deserves to live.
You, his friend? No. You are too young to be his friend. His friends, for the most part, are gone. Like the long years. Like Homburg hats and the Charleston and Lime Ricky. The ones who are left are broken and tired and faded. With old faces, faces like mine, like his. And we should be gone, too. Another age is here. This is my sadness. As for yours, Dan Valentine should never have lived in that age or this age. He was meant to be an explorer, a pioneer who conquered a wilderness, not a racketeer who conquered a west side.
Are you sure you're his friend, Mr. Webster?
I once thought so. He once thought so. Now, I haven't strength enough to be anyone's friend. What's your name?
Johnny Dollar.
Good night, Mr. Dollar.
The look in Conrad Webster's eyes held the same sort of sadness I had seen in Valentine's eyes. But they were different, too. They held a weakness. The strong, sad eyes were somewhere else in the city, walking alone, probably looking for two gunmen, and the lifeblood was slowly draining from the body that sparked them. I went back to my hotel and tried to sleep, but sleep wouldn't come. I was still rolling and tossing at 7:30 the next morning when orange juice coffee in the morning paper came up. A nationwide syndicate had picked up the new development in the Valentine shooting and gone to work on it. Among other names they mentioned in giving a resume of Valentine's career were his wife and daughter, living in New Salem under the name of Ward.
Hello?
This is Johnny Dollar. I just read the morning paper, Mrs. Valentine.
Oh, yes.
I'm sorry it broke for you this way.
That's very kind of you to say so. Maybe it's for the better, anyhow. For years, I've been wanting to tell Teresa who her father is, what he's like. I'm going to call her later today. Tell her where I am, explain why I'm here. I think she can take it.
You're doing pretty well yourself.
Thanks again. Any word yet?
No. No, we still can't find him.
Mr. Webster, did you find him?
Yes, he wasn't much help.
The New England paper said that Mrs. Ward was out of town. Sooner or later, they'll find out what town Mrs. Ward is in, I'm afraid.
Well, maybe you'd better get another hotel. Use another name.
Yes.
All right, I'll wait to hear from you.
Mr. Dollar.
Yes?
Thank you.
I put in another call to Inspector DeBacca and asked him about developments. Valentine was still unlocated. They were covering drugstores and doctor's offices where he might seek assistance. The two unidentified men who had shot him were still unidentified. The police weren't able to dig up any more witnesses or get any line on the car. By 4 in the afternoon, Mrs. Valentine had still not called me to report a new address. I got worried and went over to the Roosevelt to see what was what. I was surprised to see Inspector DeBacca in the lobby talking to the bell captain.
All right, son. If you remember anything else, call me here.
Yes, sir. I sure will.
Hi.
Hi, Dollar. Well, you want to talk first or you want me to? All right, I'll talk first. Mrs. Valentine's been staying here under the name of Ann Ward. You knew that.
Yeah.
Why didn't you say anything to me?
She asked me not to.
Doesn't make any difference now, anyhow. That boy over there called us a little while ago. He said that Dan Valentine came in here this afternoon, went upstairs, came back down 15 minutes later with Mrs. Valentine. They both left together.
Yeah, he must have seen the story in this morning's paper and guessed she was in town.
That's the way I see it. Well, we're right back where we started from, and I'm about sick of it.
We're a little better off. Two people are easier to find than one. We found them all right at 7 o'clock that night, and it was easy. Three squad cars were already drawn up in front of the little hotel, and I noticed with a sinking heart that a hearse was there also. Dan Valentine and his wife were dead. Johnny Dollar.
What is all this, Johnny?
Who's this?
Roy Vickers, New Britain Mutual. What happened to Valentine?
He was gunned down last night going into a hotel with his wife.
No!
The police here are turning the city upside down trying to get a line on two unidentified gunmen.
Well, couldn't you keep him alive?
I couldn't even find him.
Well, this is no time to be yelling at each other. I just left his daughter.
Huh? She filed claim already? Through that lawyer Webster?
No. She didn't even know anything about him until the papers broke the story. Well, I'm sorry I got annoyed for a second. Do what you can, Johnny. He'll want a full report.
Sure, Roy, sure. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the New Britain Mutual Insurance Company, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is a further accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Valentine matter. Item 9, $7 for dinner. I had it with Inspector Charles DeBaca, New Orleans Police. He was a haggard, tired-looking man about that time. All of us were.
You want some more coffee?
No, thanks.
Two men, both about 6 feet, wearing dark suits and hats, medium to slight builds, one possibly 35, the other possibly 40.
Well, that about ties up with the description of the two men who plugged Valentine earlier and earned him a place in the hospital.
Yeah. We got more of a chance this time, though. There'll be some other witnesses. Somebody has to tell us what kind of a car they had and what direction they went.
One thing, they weren't using silencers anymore.
No, but they did a professional job. I think Valentine knew him, climbed out of that hospital bed to go out looking for him.
Sounds reasonable. How do you figure the rest of it, Inspector?
Well, Valentine saw the newspaper story and knew his wife was in town. He went over, got her, and I take it they were going to check into a new hotel when their friend showed up.
She just happened to get in the way, huh?
Sure. Why'd anybody want to shoot her?
Why would anybody want to shoot him?
Well, because no matter what he was now or how he was playing it, he still lived pretty hard way back then. A man who's lived the kind of life he has and done the things he has is bound to make a few enemies to remember.
Now, I think it has something to do with his family. I agree with you that Valentine probably made enemies all over. But he wasn't the kind of man to get excited about any of those kind of people. He pretty well knew how to take care of himself and handle trouble. That's why he was out looking for them.
You sound pretty certain.
It seems to me that if Valentine had been expecting trouble from some of the old-timers, he'd have carried a gun.
You got a point. But then again, he was pretty gentled up. You know how he spent most of his time? Painting.
Huh?
And that house he bought out in Jefferson Parish is covered with pictures he's done since he's been out. Oils. Pretty good, too. When he wasn't painting it, he was listening to music.
You'd hardly think of Danny Valentine taking up the arts.
Hardly ever. Well, I've got to make a call and get busy.
Yeah. Inspector.
Yeah?
Any objection to me going out and looking around that house?
It's your privilege. Personally, I'm going to look around town for a couple of gunmen.
Anyone out there now?
His cook. Name's Yachino. Nice woman.
Okay, I'll keep in touch with you, Inspector.
Do that. Dollar.
Now what?
You forgot to tell me you looked up the old family lawyer, Conrad Webster, the other night.
Oh, I was trying to find Valentine, the same as you.
Well, if you happen to run into Webster again, you tell him to drop in and see me.
Huh?
He is missing.
I didn't know what to say to that, so I left him standing there and went back to my hotel and shaved, changed clothes, and tried to go over the whole thing in my mind. I did phone into the police station and find out that the slugs that had killed Valentine and his wife were from an Italian-make pistol, a rum barrel. 37.5 caliber. So far, untraced. Expense account item 10, cost of cab, from my hotel to Danny Valentine's house in Jefferson Parish.
Yes, sir?
How do you do? Are you Mrs. Iacino?
Yes, sir. Who are you, please?
My name is Johnny Dollar, Mrs. Iacino. I'm from New Britain Mutual Insurance Company. I'd like to talk to you, if I may.
About Mr. Valentine?
Yes.
Not right now, Mr. Dollar. Some other time, huh?
Well, if you prefer it that way, Mrs. Iacino, but...
It's been a hard day here. I mean, Mr. Valentine's death and his wife being killed with him. All of these policemen in and out of here, and now Miss Ward and all...
Miss Ward? His daughter?
Yes, she's here. Arrived 2 hours ago. She's... Stay here.
Could I see her?
You come tomorrow, Mr. Dollar, please. Tomorrow...
Mrs. Iacino.
Yes, Miss Ward.
Who is it?
Mr. Dollar. He's from the insurance company.
Insurance company?
Yes.
I'd like to talk to him, Mrs. Iacino.
Teresa Ward stood at the base of the iron grill stairway, tall and dark-eyed. And I saw that, like her mother, she had a quiet intensity about her face that made it beautiful. At the same time, ageless. She smiled politely at me. I could only stand there without speaking for a long moment, looking at her. Then Mrs. Iacino excused herself and we were alone.
I wanted to talk to someone who might be able to give me a little more information about all this. It's all quite new to me.
I'll tell you what I can, Miss Ward.
My name is Valentine, isn't it? Really, Valentine?
Yes, it is.
Well, suppose we correct that mistake right now.
Sure. There's nothing wrong with Valentine.
From what a Mr. Vickers from the insurance office in Hartford told me, I'm to be quite well off because of this man that was murdered.
You mean Dan Valentine?
Yes, Dan Valentine. They tell me he was my father.
Who told you?
Oh, reporters at home and your insurance company. Mother told me my name was Ward. Poor thing. Must have been difficult for her over the years, keeping the secret from me.
Yes, she told me she thought it was the best thing. She, well, the same as he did.
Tell me about my father. Was he a bad man?
Oh, as good or as bad as the Volstead Act made people. I only met him a couple of times.
To awaken one morning and discover that you're the only daughter of a famous racketeer who's been murdered.
Look, Miss Ward, if he had anything to do with the way you turned out, with what you seem to possess within yourself, I'd say offhand that whatever he was or did, he thought of you.
Are you flattering me?
I'm not trying to. You seem like a very nice person.
And so do you, Mr. Dollar. Will you tell me all about this, please?
Well, let's see. You're 21, isn't that right?
Yes.
Just about 15 years ago or so, your father was on trial for income tax evasion. Just before he was convicted, he set up a trust fund with my insurance company to provide for you. It's been paying money for your support and education ever since. According to the terms of the trust, all of the money becomes yours now that your mother and father are dead. It comes to well over $50,000.
That's all there is to it?
Mm-hmm.
I suppose I'm grateful to him. I suppose I should be grateful. I can't say that I'm particularly sorry about his death any more than I would be if any other human being died violently somewhere. But about Mother's death, I miss her very much already, Mr. Dollar.
She was holding up pretty well until that point. Then she let go. I held her in my arms and I talked to her. I told her what I knew of her father's life and death. She told me how she'd been reared so far removed from anything that might have been connected her in the least way with the Valentine name. Altogether, it was a revealing conversation for both of us. Mrs. Iacino brought us some food and wine.
How long will you be in New Orleans?
Until all of this is straightened out.
You mean until they find out who killed my mother and father?
Yes. How about you?
Oh, I really don't know. After the funerals, I suppose I'll go back. But I wanted to see him, to see what he looked like, what kind of life he led. He was just an ordinary man, wasn't he? You seen these pictures before?
No, this is my first time in the house. Looked like Italian landscapes to me. Very good.
Mm-hmm. Must have been something he had with Mother.
Hmm?
She was from Italy.
May I ask you something?
Yes.
How do you feel about him now?
Is this for your report?
For myself.
Well, since you've been here, these last 2 hours, I've begun to think of him for what he was. My father, I mean. I'd like to know why he was killed and who did it. Will I see you again?
I hope so. Terry.
Yes?
I hope so very much.
So do I, Johnny.
I left her at the door that night with a warm sensation inside of me. Something I certainly hadn't expected in the business at hand. The next morning, I was back at the house talking to Mrs. Iacino. She gave me all the information she could remember about Valentine's activities. All of it accurate, but lacking in any possible clue as to the identity of the two men who had killed him and his wife. I had breakfast with Terry there and helped her with funeral arrangements. Then I spent a solid 12 hours with Inspector DeBaca, who had still not located or identified the two mysterious men. However, there were other developments.
This may be something, Johnny.
Oh?
Conrad Webster's been found.
Huh?
Up by Lake Punch Train. Just identified him. He was shot to death with a .37.5.
Italian gun?
Yep. Just like the one that killed Dan Valentine and his wife.
It later developed that the slugs taken from Webster's body, when compared with those that had killed the Valentines, were fired from the same weapon. The case took on proportions. Every available bit of information regarding the two ex-big shots of the 20s was located, read, and reread. It meant activity in cities like St. Louis, Chicago, Detroit, and New York. But no new information as to the identity of the killers. I went back to the house.
Johnny.
Here. What is this? You're shaking.
Hold me, please.
Sure.
I suppose I'm being a terrible fool about it all, Johnny, but they've been after me all day. Cheap little things. Newspaper syndicate wants me to write my exclusive story as the shadowed daughter of Dan Valentine. Fairy princess of a racketeer.
Take it easy.
Even Hollywood called some producer. Oh, Johnny, I shouldn't have come here at all.
Then what would I have done, Terry?
What would I have done? Make yourself a drink, Johnny. I'll go put on a new face.
It had become apparent to me in the short time I'd known her that she'd grown to love the memory of her father. Also, that the pressure of all that had happened was beginning to take its toll on her. We were walking down the gravel path away from the house. She was quieted down. I suppose I was thinking how nice it would be to kiss her. I twisted, trying for the gun inside my pocket, but there was nobody to shoot at. The two men who had fired the guns were already out of sight. I was alone with Terry Valentine, who was hanging on the gate. I caught her before she fell.
Why me, Johnny? Why?
She was dead before I could answer. Johnny Dollar.
Hey, what are you doing at the Valentine house?
Get a car out here quick, Inspector. Terry Valentine's just been shot. Two guys
now,
showed
slow
up.
Slow down. When did all this happen?
A few seconds ago.
Ambulance?
No good, DeBaca. She died in my arms.
Oh. Well, do you think they're still around there?
They must be. I'm going looking.
Now, wait a minute. This is a police matter. You stay put. I'll have a car there in 5 minutes and you can... Johnny, I heard that. Your gun. Now, look, you're all wound up. Don't do anything.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the New Britain Mutual Insurance Company, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of further expenditures during my investigation of the Valentine matter. Dan Valentine, ex-gangster, and of course your policyholder. But then his wife was killed too. Then his lawyer. Then his daughter. The girl that I... 30 seconds after Terry Valentine died in my arms, I was stumbling down the gravel path that led from her house to the road. It had all happened so suddenly, I can't say that what I did from there on or what I felt was entirely rational. All I know is I hadn't heard a car leave the area, which meant the two killers were still somewhere nearby. Then, in the dim light, I saw the car. A man was climbing into it. Hey, stop! Stop or I'll shoot! Stop! Get out of there. Get out of there and get your hands up.
I'm a hit. I'm afraid to move.
Come on, get out. Come on.
I'm coming.
You two, come on.
It's no use on him, mister. He used up. You got him real good. I need a doctor. Help me get to a
doctor. Stop right there.
Doctor.
Stand still.
You pretty tough fella.
What's your name?
Sisto.
Sisto what?
It's good enough for you. I need a doctor, bad.
Listen. Tell it to me. Tell it to me right now. If you don't tell it to me now, you'll never tell it to anybody. Tell it!
No. Tell it! I need a doctor.
Tell it!
I die first.
Johnny! What is this?
Who's he?
He's going to kill me. He's going to kill me.
Now, you better give me that gun, Johnny. The state will take care of him. Thanks.
I should have done it. I wanted to do it.
I know, son. Come on, let's get out of here.
But I didn't get out of there. I waited around while they dug the body of the other man out of the smashed-up car, and while they carried the still, limp form of Teresa Valentine away. She was the third member of the family who had died violently within 3 days.
I'm sorry about it, Donna.
Inspector, I was hoping I might have been wrong, that she wasn't dead.
Oh, you weren't wrong. Which one shot her?
Huh?
The dead one, or the one we still got in the hospital?
Oh, I don't know. Both of them, I guess.
You don't feel like talking, but I'm just trying to pin it down.
Well, what about him?
Can't get much out of him so far. He's in pretty bad shape.
Let me ask him some questions, Inspector. I'm no police officer. I don't have to obey any rules.
Now take it easy, kid. You were about to do that once, and we'd be holding you for murder if you'd gone ahead. I know how you feel about Teresa Valentine.
Has he said anything at all?
Nothing. We found papers on him and the other one that makes them brothers, Sisto and Darby Chianti, from New York. So far, it doesn't seem to be any connection with the Valentines. But people like Valentine make a lot of enemies. That girl doesn't figure.
Yeah.
I know you talked to her a lot these last couple of days, Johnny. What'd she say?
Oh, nothing that had anything to do with this. You know yourself, she didn't even know her name was Valentine until her father got shot at.
Yeah, that could have been an act.
And you could have been 20 feet tall.
Just trying.
Try with that punk you got upstairs in the hospital.
We will, Johnny. We will. Just... pardon me. Johnny, you have bad news. Maybe I spoke too soon.
Why?
Sisto Chianti died 5 minutes ago.
Expense account, item 10, $10. Car rental. I went out to the Valentine house once more.
Oh, Mr. Dollar.
Hello, Mrs. Iacino.
Please, come in. So many policemen, so many reporters. I've been trying to close the house.
Sure.
I know how you must feel. I mean about her. What of these Chianti brothers?
Well, we don't know much about them yet. The New York police are still doing a rundown on them. Don't let me stop you, whatever you're doing. I'll just look around if you don't mind.
All right.
Oh, well, one thing.
Yes?
Did Mr. Valentine make any provision for you?
Yeah. He thought of me. $1,000. Whatever he was, the man I knew was kind and good. And his sins had been forgiven him.
I spent 2 hours or better going from room to room, looking at the oils that Dan Valentine had painted. Pastoral scenes, happy scenes, gay scenes, all of them with colorful Italian backgrounds. I was thinking about that when I walked into Inspector DeBacca's office late that afternoon.
I don't get it, Johnny.
Don't get what?
Here. This came from New York on the Chianti boys.
Oh?
They came to this country when they were 18 and 21. Both of them were naturalized citizens, lived with their father.
Records?
Not a thing. No trouble ever.
What else?
That's about it. New York police can't seem to locate their old man. Disappeared about a week ago. Lived on the east side.
What's about him?
Well, that's another funny thing. He's taken out his papers and was due for an examination with the immigration people this week. They're looking for him, too.
We went out and had dinner together and talked about the case. It had been a strange one. The deaths were useless, the motives unknown. I parted company with Inspector DeBacca and went back to my hotel to trouble it out with sleep. About 11 o'clock, I had a phone call. Johnny Dollar.
This is DeBacca. Old man Chianti just showed up at our city morgue and wants to take his two sons back to New York for burial.
20 minutes later, I was standing in the coroner's office while Inspector DeBacca led a small, wizened old man into the room and sat him down on one of the chairs.
Mr. Chianti, it's Mr. Dollar.
How do you do?
Mr. Chianti.
I read about you. You killed my boys. Is it so?
Yes. They'd killed four other people.
I know. But...
why did they kill the Valentine family, Mr. Chanti? Why did they kill Conrad Webster, the lawyer? Do you know why?
See, I know.
Then tell me. They're all dead now.
I'm still alive, Mr. Dollar.
He refused to talk about his sons or any of their activities. DeBacca held him to answer to the immigration officials. He remained in his cell, silent and noncommittal to all visitors, including the chaplain. I appeared before the coroner's jury the following morning and was cleared of any charges. Pietro Chianti still had said nothing. And he looked at me as though he was going to keep on saying nothing. Mr. Chianti?
I see you, Mr. Dollar. More questions?
Dan Valentine's wife was your daughter, wasn't she? Wasn't she? All right, you don't have to admit it. I have a copy of the marriage license right here. It came from New York this morning.
She was my daughter.
Is that all you have to say now?
I no talk.
Then I will, Mr. Chanti. Because your daughter, Mrs. Valentine, had a daughter herself, Teresa. A lovely, wonderful girl that your two sons killed. I happen to know that girl. I might have been in love with her, I don't know. But I do know...
she had to die, too.
What?
This Conrad Webster, Mr. Valentine, and my own daughter and granddaughter, they had to die. All bad.
You?
See, I order it.
You ordered it? And who are you? God?
I am the father. When a daughter marries a bad man, only bad can come from it. The granddaughter was then bad. He come to our village many years ago. Take her away. He and the man Webster help him. It lived with me. The stealing of my own flesh and blood. All this time it grow inside of me. I am old, but I keep on living. Only so I can come here and find him and destroy him. And her. And the daughter. And the lawyer man who helped him. And I destroyed them through my sons.
A whole family. Vendetta. Was that it?
If you like. Vendetta. He was a bad man. Who did bad things. Bad man. I smoke now. You have a cigarro, eh?
The disposition of old Pietro Chianti is up to the Immigration Department. I didn't stay around New Orleans to learn the results of all the extensive examinations that would have to be completed to test his sanity. I'd had enough of the town. Expense account, item 11, $140.20, hotel and board. Item 12, $28, car rental miscellaneous. That includes flowers to the Valentine family. Item 13, same as item 1, $175. Transportation back home. Expense account total, $1,290.38. Remarks? Whenever I close my eyes, I can see a lovely girl standing at the bottom of a long, curving stairway, smiling, because I'm in the room. That's all. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Remember, please, there'll be another exciting story for you beginning next Monday night.
Monday, the Lorco Diamond Matter, in which a trip to Algiers makes Come With Me to the Casbah sound like an invitation to a Sunday school picnic. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in this week's cast were Lillian Baeff, Betty Lou Gerson, Barney Phillips, Will Wright, Forrest Lewis, Marvin Miller, Jane Avello, and Jack Boyles. Be sure to join us on Monday night, same time and station, for another exciting story of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
So that was Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, The Valentine Matter. It did actually have a little love in it this morning for Valentine's Day. You heard episodes 3, 4, and 5 had spliced together. They would have had an original air date of November 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, 1955. You're listening to 91.5 FM. And or WMFO.org, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. I'm going to go ahead and fulfill an FCC obligation quick.
I'm Sarah, and this is my story.
I'm Ellen, and this is my story. One night, I was at a bar.
I was having fun with my friends.
I had one too many drinks.
I got behind the wheel to go home.
I got a cab to go home.
All of a sudden, from out of nowhere, a squirrel ran across the road. It happened so quickly, I barely had time to react.
The cabbie barely had time to react.
I swerved.
The cab swerved.
I can't believe it. I hit a guy.
I cannot believe it. The cabbie just missed a guy.
I wish I took a cab.
Thank goodness I took a cab.
You have the choice to save a life. Don't drive buzzed. It's a decision you'll never regret. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Thank you, Ad Council, for to conclude the last 16 and a half minutes of the show. I'm going to go ahead and play Rusty Warren, this female comic who got in a little bit of trouble in Boston, or actually Revere. Again, my name is Arthur, and you've been listening to the Grand Hour here this morning. Play this out. I forget the name. There's a show after us if you're listening live. Thanks.
Come on, sweetie. This is a big one. Are you ready, sir?
Skol.
L'chaim, skol.
Salute.
Oh, we got the right end of Boston. Oh, it's truth, because they told me Boston was proper. Oh, and enough proper about this good group, boy. Yeah, oh, look at the knockers in that one. We got a lot of biggies here tonight. Don't talk. You know, with all those silly songs that I've done, so many women have asked me why they haven't seen me on television. But do we not live in a wild world today? I do believe they are going to have something called pay-as-you-see TV. That's when you people put a dollar in the slot for the shows that you want to see. They say there'd be no boring commercials, but outside of that, I'll vow. We'll pay to see the same old stuff we're seeing for free right now. I'm sure Toll Television will have a little more zest and zip if we could see what we want to see without any censorship. What programs there would be, and I'm sure you will agree. We'd gladly pay the fee for pay-as-you-see TV if we could see humanity on TV privately. Ah, the television we see now is nice but too precise. What we need are programs with some scandal and good old-fashioned spice. And we'd gladly pay the fee for pay-as-you-see TV. You know, there should be a naughty network for those past 21 who think a bit of good, clean sin is stimulating fun. If there were a naughty network in existence on TV, here are some of the programs I'm sure that we might see. First, there'd be a live spectacular on that television screen, featuring lusty, lurid scenes from Confidential magazine. Then a daily drama with sparkle, sex, and fizz, starring all the greats of showbiz, called I Married Liz. On Person to Person, we might see that famous country squire, Noel Coward by the fireside, throwing faggots on the fire. And can you imagine flipping on your naughty network switch to hear an hour of body songs on Sing Along with Mitch? Or tuning in some afternoon and hear Jack Bailey say, "This is Liberace, our queen for a day." Yes, we gladly pay the fee for pay-as-you-see TV if we could see humanity on TV privately. And on that naughty network, a rising star you'll see. And that rising star would be me. Oh, girls, I can't wait for pay TV to get here. Because that's the only way I'm going to get on television. The way it is now, I can't even get my knockers in the door, let alone get them up. But believe me, on pay TV, the password would be sex. I can see it now. I do a guest shot in Ben Casey and play it rough and racy. He'd never get me stable on that operating table. And that's just the way I do it. Play it racy with Casey and get my share from Kildare. But you know, I've been asked to do a spectacular on Telstar. But to protect America's image overseas, I will not be doing my regular act. God forbid the Russians should know what they're missing. Anyway, on this show, I will play the part of a bad girl who goes to a convent in Boston and becomes a nun. It'll be called I Was a Nun Touchable for the USA. So if that's the way that it would be, if we agree to pay the fee for a naughty network on pay as you say TV.
Sit right down. We're having a little discussion about sex. You know, one, two, three, four, five, sex. It's all right. I think she lost her knockers and she was out looking for them. Go right ahead. Oh, you're sitting with the male virgin over there. The young gentleman. I've never met a male virgin. How do you do, sir? A male virgin in Boston. Isn't that cute? Are you really a male virgin or are you a hairdresser?
Oh,
Oh. Did you ever get mad at your knockers? Did you, your little ones, did you ever get mad at them? Sometimes? I don't blame you. I get mad at mine, too. But I don't care. I don't care if they ever grow. She wants to know how to make them grow? Honey, if I knew, I wouldn't be here. Oh, I tried everything to make them grow. Nothing works. Oh, honey. Debbie Drake, will that do it? I slept with Vic Tanney for a week. It didn't help. Oh, I felt good, but my knockers didn't get any bigger. You're all padded? I can't wait for mine to grow. Now, get the plastic ones where you blow the air in them. You had them and they went flat? What'd you do, wear them on a jet airplane? You carry a little hand pump to... Oh, we got a... I think when I come into town, all the girls with the big boobs get together and get tickets all for one night, you know? You never... What happened to yours, sweetheart? Oh, we got little nanny no-knockers over here. Honey, you think you're in bad shape. You should see this group. Don't worry, they're gonna grow. Right? They're gonna grow. Do you remember last year, I think it was, I told you if you put 5 sesame seeds in your navel, it makes your boobies bigger? Honey, I had those damn seeds in my navel a whole year. My knockers didn't get any bigger, and I got the blackest navel you ever want to see. Don't laugh. I just finished a tour of Alabama, and it takes guts to bring a black navel into Birmingham. Oh, I drink so much, it's pathetic. I don't like to drink, but it makes me get drunk enough to do it. Thank you, sir. You're my first one today. I've been up here for quite a while, and nobody asked me, and I'm glad. What is your name, sir?
Whitey.
Whitey? I'm ready, Whitey. Aunt Whitey, I want you to tell your wife something. If you do it with me, it's not cheating, it's charity. Do you think she can understand that? It's like bringing a care package to the needy. We have the sexiest group we ever had here tonight. Tonight's the night. You girls are wonderful. Thank you for marching. They're talking about men marching. I have thought of this for about, let's see, 1960, I made the Knockers Up album. I couldn't think of what to name it if the man marched. What are you going to call it? If men, what are they, I know what they're going to march with, but I don't know what to call it. No, it's too dirty. You got to think of a clean name for it, and I think of all the names. I couldn't think of a clean name for it. You know, when you stop to think of it, if I ever wrote a song, if I ever wrote a song for the men marching, you know, with women, it's all right. You know, they'll get up there with the knockers up and they'll march a little bit and carry on. But if I ever wrote a march for the men, is all it takes is one drunk in one club for one show somewhere in this country, and this guy is going to get up and out, boom, it's, oh, no. Thank you. ain't. Some newly wedded bee in the audience, and all of a sudden she'd scream out to her husband, "But you told me you had the biggest in the whole world." And then some woman that's been married about 20 years, she'd give her husband a real whack on the shoulder and say, "Hey, get up there and show him what you got, George." We would have such a madhouse in here. It would be fantastic. I couldn't possibly do it. Couldn't possibly write a song for the men marching. You wouldn't even be in the march, Peter. What are you worried about? We have had such a great group here tonight. But I do want to do a song for all the gentlemen here this evening who, no matter how they feel in this world today, if they can only understand and only realize that they'll never grow too old to be young. Now if you believe that every rainbow is waiting to take you to a pot of gold. And if you're
we'll cut out there. It's Rusty Warren, band in Boston, pay TV. Kind of interesting. That was back in 1963, so that would maybe have been recorded in 62. I'm going to leave you here with one more. Happy Valentine's Day.
Up until